Notes from the Left Forum 2017, Part 2. The conference entitled Resistance was held in New York City June 2nd through June 4th, and it looked at questions of power, strategy, and tactics as the resistance to Donald Trump rises. The focus on many panels this year was on moving beyond Trump into an examination of the system which produced him. Part 2 of Notes from the Left Forum is drawn from a panel by Democracy at Work called Economy and Psychology, a tale of two depressions with economics professor Rick Wolf, followed by psychotherapist Dr. Harriet Fraud. We begin with Professor Wolf on how the American economy for the last 40 years has worked to depress our people. Stagnant wages instead of real wages, where the price of what you buy also rises, means the average worker can't buy more than they could 40 years ago. And as the professor explains, this gave rise to the present debt society. Mortgage debt, car loan debt, student debt, and with those credit cards that line your wallet, credit card debt. Professor Wolf.
When did the credit card become a normal thing in this country? The 1970s. You think that's a coincidence? No. Before that, a credit card was something that a business person carried around. American Express was about it. It was the 1970s that the genius in the bank understood, let's fill the wallets of depressed Americans with as many pieces of plastic as we can cram in there. Because they're so upset about their inability to consume on a rising scale that they will borrow like crazy people, or maybe like severely depressed people. Because it's the only way to do what? To be an American. To capture the American dream. To fulfill the expectation of a rising standard of living that you had promised yourself, that your parents had promised you, and that you were busy promising your children. Of course you had to borrow, and Citibank figured it out. You were all patsies. They could get you to take credit cards. It was easy. Just send you 15 things in the mail. By the 13th, you fill it out. And you get another card to max out. What an amazing system. It fed first. It got you to accept an end to the rising standard of living in the 1970s. Yes, let's be honest amongst ourselves, even if it's called the Left Forum. And I give the same talk in places that are not left forums and would be horrified at the thought of a left forum. We accepted it. You did. I did. It's even worse. Like depressed people, we were glad to get the credit card. As if we preferred to have a rising standard of living by going into debt than the way we had had it for 150 years, which was without going into debt. To be grateful for being screwed is not a healthy sign. And it takes a lot in a modern society to have so pliant a mass of working class people. You have been had. That's the reality. But it was because you were depressed psychologically. And that was in turn because you have an economy that works this way. And why did it? I'll put my economics hat on. Because the American capitalist class, the people who own and operate the big businesses in this country, they had a kind of eureka moment in the 1970s. Remember in the comic books, there's a little box that, eureka, I figured something out. Well, these capitalists, none too smart a group, had a real exciting moment in the 1970s when they noticed two things. One, that there was a world out there beyond the United States which had a charming quality. While here in the United States for 150 years, the real wages had gone up, in the rest of the world, turns out, they hadn't. If you are a nasty mind, like mine, you would have probably figured out that the reason they could go up here had more than a little to do with the fact that they didn't go up anywhere else. In fact, often went down. But the eureka moment for capitalists was in this form. Why the hell are we producing goods and services here in the United States where we pay workers this, when if we moved it to China, we could pay workers, and I'm going to put my hand where you can't see it, to underscore much lower? Which is why all of you right now, with very few exceptions, are wearing underpants not made in this country. And over, don't look down, do that later. It applies to your overpants as well, and your shirts and your shoes and your gloves and, you know, pretty much everything else. That was done to save wages. Let's be real clear. You make more profits because the same object is produced by a worker to whom you pay much less. No rocket scientist here. That's why it was done. You know what that means in plain English? It means that to the working class, the following sentence was delivered. Drop dead. Who needs you? We're out of here. All we need you now to be is docile consumers, but producers, we don't, forget it. We're not interested in you as a producer. And not only are we going to take the job, but why should we be taxed, we big businesses, to pay for schools, to train workers we don't need? So we don't need fancy schools and expensive state colleges. We can have you all in a community college and in a voc ed program, or in no program, or in that special kind of educational program which we call prisons. American people understood this, even if they didn't admit it. Somewhere they got it. Somewhere there they understood they were not wanted, not appreciated. If you lived in a place like, I don't know, Detroit or Cleveland or Camden or Youngstown or Topeka or all kinds of places, all you had to do is open your eyes as you walked through town and you'd realize that the workplaces were abandoned and the need for working people was gone. You were being replaced by cheaper workers someplace else. The businesses of this country had chosen to put their money someplace else, and so the bottom line to the American working men and women was, screw you, drop dead. We don't need you, we don't want you. Of course, I should underscore, if I had more time, I would, that this 40 years, 70 to 2008, roughly, also had secondary effects. When the capitalist hires you to produce a good, you produce more value than the capitalist pays you. That's why he hires you. That's already depressing. Think about it. No, think about it seriously. You get hired for an hour. You get paid $20 for your hour of work. The employer knows that whatever you add to what he can sell by virtue of your hour of labor, you give him more goods at the end of the day to sell than he would have if he hadn't hired you. He's going to pay you $20. The only way he's ever going to do that is if during those 20 hours you add more to the value of what he has to sell at the end than the $20 he pays you, which means that the only way you ever get a job is if you produce more value than you get, which means when you were young and naive and innocent and told yourself with great pride that you would never work for anybody who didn't pay you what you were worth, you're now depressed as it slowly sinks into your head that that never happened, that your parents never understood what you now grasp, which is the name of the game in capitalism is you produce more than your employer pays you. Ha, 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 at your expense. Of course you're depressed. Of course you need happy hour at the end of the eight unhappy ones. Of course you do. Because you're depressed. And whether you find solace in alcohol or 27 other substitutes, what difference does it make? You are depressed. What happens if people are depressed? All kinds of interesting things happen to them. One, they stop spending money the way they did before. It's a serious problem with the American economy. We cannot recover from 2008, and one of the major reasons is the mass of American consumers are not spending money. And that's because they're scared to death and they're depressed. It's very serious. You know what else happens? Workers do not go to work with whatever idea of being productive they once had because they're too depressed. And the productivity of the United States economy has been limping along for decades now. And when everyone's scratching their head, why would that be? We give these workers more and more training. We give them lots of fancy machines. Yeah, but they're depressed. And so they don't work the machines the way they once did. They don't have the attitude. They don't have the spirit. It's very expensive to depress your working class and very politically dangerous. So let me end on that. When workers are depressed because the economy depresses them, where do they go? What do? Well, they go in lots of different directions. One, they can become suicidal. They can become reliant on drugs and alcohol. They can resign themselves to their fate. They can lose all interest in everything and anything. That often happens. But it's not the only reaction. They can become very bitter. They can look at the whole society and say, this is not helping me. Or to make a long story short, they can become anti-establishment. They can become enraged. They don't even know exactly why, because they haven't followed all of this and nobody's explained it to them. But they know that they want to give a particular finger on one of their hands to the establishment in their country. And all they need is an opportunity. Let the establishment say you should do X, and with great glee, they'll do not X. First example, in England, a trivial issue, abused by the ruling class for years, that everything bad that happens in England is because we're part of Europe, and everything good about Europe is here in England. Typical nationalist junk. And the ruling class says, hey, let's have a vote, figuring they had it in the bag. Let's stay in Europe or not. And the working class gives them the finger, votes to leave Europe. The working class knows, it does, that being in or out of Europe is not their issue, not their problem, will not solve anything. Leaves the same people in power who were in power before. But it was a chance to give that finger. So they took it. The election in this country in 2016 did the same. Somebody said, I'm against all of this. I don't care about all of this. I'm going to screw it all over. I'm going to change everything. I'm the new. You want to give the finger to everybody? Vote for me. And they did, didn't they? And he makes a practice of putting that finger up as often as possible to keep the finger people happy. Did you read how he withdrew from the Paris Accords? America, we're not going to be told what to do by those foreign people over there. Wonderful. But there's also buried in here, and this is my last thing, a fantastic opportunity. Because the enemy of the mass of people, what has gotten them depressed economically and psychologically, is this economic system that works this way, that responds to workers who struggled for 150 years to get higher wages by saying, see ya, we're going to where the wages are low. We're taking it all away from you. Their workers know that. And if there were a movement in this country that could address the depression that people feel and help them understand where it comes from and why they're suffering it, then they wouldn't be looking for fake ways of pushing back, giving the finger to what doesn't matter, and allowing ridiculous morons into political power. Wouldn't be necessary. They wouldn't get lost in the symbolism. They might go after the real thing. That's an opportunity we have, and it would be a horrible tragedy if we didn't see that another way of explaining to people and sharing with people the feelings of being depressed, validating those, you have every right to be depressed about this, but here is a solution, would be one hell of a better way to respond, which they're going to understand more and more in the weeks and months ahead, because what they did in England to vote for Brexit and what we did here to vote for Trump will solve none of what I have talked to you about, and therefore the depression will continue. And when those solutions fail, maybe those that come out of things like a Left Forum will prove that they have a better shot at it. Thank you.
Economics professor Rick Wolf. And you're listening to part two of Notes from the Left Forum. Next up, Harriet Fraud. She's a psychotherapist committed to radical social structural change. Dr. Fraud looks at the emotional toll of inequality, beginning with mental illness.
One in five Americans is taking at least one psych drug. We're only 5% of the world's population, and we're taking over 66% of the world's psych drugs. There are at least three reasons why. One, that people's hopes for economic and personal stability and happiness are dashed. They're lost and sad. They don't know what to do. They don't have a movement that helps them. Another is that instead of reaching out to join with others to change things, they've lost their trust and become depoliticized and isolated. A third is capitalist marketing, the case of drugs and mental illness. We are the only Western nation that allows direct-to-consumer advertising. No other Western industrialized nation allows that. We also lead the world in the kind of market-driven healthcare that rewards doctors with money for prescribing brand-name drugs. For example, the average doctor gets at least $30,000 a year for having little seminars to which a trade representative comes, where they tout to other doctors the wonderful benefits of prescribing a drug. A great example is from the Harvard Child Psychiatry Department, of which Dr. Biederman was the head, and he also was the head of the Child Psychiatry Association. He wrote extensively on the safety of extending the very profitable antipsychotic Zyprexa drug, extending that to use for children. Of course, it did give children diabetes and did not cure their mental illness, but he got $3.5 million for himself to set up a special center for Dr. Biederman. And when asked, one of his staff was asked, hey, he did get fined $3.5 million. No, I'm sorry, that was $3 million. And when one of his staff was asked, well, you got the biggest fine we've ever given. Why didn't that stop you from doing this? And the guy said, hey, if you're racing towards $17 billion, you pay the traffic ticket. That's what they made off Zyprexa. Another way that people look for refuge in their misery is with a self-prescription, an addiction. At this time, America is in the throes of a serious addiction problem with heroin, opiates, and opioids. Opiates are a natural organic drug, and opioids are synthetics, pain pills, and so on. Drug overdose is now the leading cause of accidental death in the United States, ahead of car accidents or shootings. There are even more opiate and opioid deaths than any other kind. What does that say? Who's using and who's dying now? Drug addiction used to be an epidemic that was associated with African Americans who had no chance to move upwards, who were depressed because their mobility was frozen, and the inner city. Now the suburbs are the inner city. Now the epidemic is white. It affects just those who have been devastated by their loss of the American dream. Suburban people who used to be in the middle class, rural whites who used to have thriving farms, and also children who see no hope for the future. It affects the young man who had hoped to inherit his mom's mom and pop diner, which is now McDonald's, Pizza Hut, Friendly's, etc. The couple who planned to take over their local grocery store, shoe store, food store, which is now all Walmart. The blue-collar rural worker who's a painter or a carpenter whose livelihoods are stolen by corporate America running huge businesses. Or the middle-aged white man who had looked forward to retirement, was fired shortly before he retired so he doesn't have to get anything. Here too, Big Pharma contributed. Most heroin users begin with prescribed drugs, which are, as I showed you the example before, aggressively marketed to doctors. Prescribing rates for painkillers have doubled in spite of the addiction warnings. There are enough prescription drugs for opiates to give every American his or her own bottle of pills. 48,000 American women have died in the last 5 years of painkiller overdoses. Because women are more likely to get pain medication and be in chronic pain. It's very interesting the way this works. I had a client when I worked elsewhere who was an elderly woman living in an elder complex. And every month, the drug dealer would come by because she was on disability. She could barely make ends meet with her Social Security and disability. And every month, the drug dealer would come by and offer her $15 a pill for the pain pills she got for free, which then he sold for $45 and $50. And he'd work through the whole complex, and so people would have some discretionary income. The pharmaceutical companies worked hard to get past permission to issue oxycodone. People fought it because OxyContin became a highly abused drug that was responsible for boarding up all the drug stores and huge crime sprees, particularly in the South. The consumers lost. Psychopharma won. They had the money to bribe the legislators. Capitalism plays its part in this heroin addiction. In addition, and this opiate and opioid addiction, and most people go on to heroin after they've been prescribed pain pills and then run out because heroin is cheaper, street heroin. Americans are suffering. Advertising giants and a corrupt, market-driven healthcare system converts their suffering into profits. Pills can't solve their problems. They can affect brain chemistry, but so can therapy or getting involved in a political organization. A second cost of inequality, which I'll look at, is homicide. Here again, America leads the developed world. Don't say we're not leaders. Part of that deluge of violence is from our uniquely unchecked gun use and gun sales. Americans are 20 times more likely to die from guns than any other developed nation. The marketing agents for the gun lobby had a very smart idea. Instead of saying, buy guns, make the gun producers rich, they've converted to buy guns, recapture your lost manhood, your Second Amendment rights to stand up for yourself. And this is at a point where the male gender is feeling assailed by low wages and feeling as if their rights are robbed. Manhood and rights are smarter advertisements than just make us rich. Their lobbying enhances the daily slaughter from guns. Mass murder has a particularly American twist, and that involves killing two or three people at the same time, people with whom one has no contact. That's mass murder. It doesn't count the many millions who kill their girlfriends or their whole family, et cetera. The last time I studied that was September of 2017, I guess September of 2016. In that month, no wealthy nation except the U.S. had any killings, and we had 30 mass killings. The killers were all American men who were either disappointed in their love lives or had lost jobs, or both. They were unmanned within traditional gender stereotyped manhood, and they reclaimed their manhood in a blaze of murderous glory. Mass murder began in the 1980s under Reagan, when union busting became something that the president was involved in, and where corporations were boosted over the rest of us through lower taxes for them, higher for us, and anti-union and anti-worker drives. They're a symptom of American inequality and corporate capitalist dominion. A third area of the mental health disaster and its resulting capitalist inequality is lack of trust. I think it's safe to say that the majority of Americans no longer trust our government, something which Trump capitalizes on. They also, sadly, don't trust any collective organization, except for Bernie Sanders, they seem to, who is still the most popular politician, even though he was knifed in the back by the Democrats there. They don't really trust any organization that wants their active participation. They can't even trust their intimate partners, and they also can't trust themselves anymore.
Dr. Harriet Fraud, you've been listening to Notes from the Left Forum 2017, Part 2, a panel drawn from the conference entitled Resistance, held in New York City from June 2nd through June 4th. We heard from economics professor Rick Wolf and psychotherapist Dr. Harriet Fraud. The panel they were on was called Economy and Psychology, A Tale of Two Depressions. Linda Perry, WBAI News, Pacifica Radio, New York.